Tu vas changer de job. Faut que tu changes d'amis. Je te conseille de changer de ton. Ben, c'est pas à elle de changer. C'est à toi. La violence faite aux femmes, ça s'arrête maintenant. Sensibilisons, intervenons et appelons SOS Violence Conjugale. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Off the Hour, right here on CQUT 90.3 FM. We are 11 days into the month of November. We are broadcasting from unceded Mohawk and Anishinaabe territory. You are tuned in to The Avalanche, a special presentation of CQUT's Community News Department. The Avalanche seeks to cover issues affecting those with disabilities. I'm your host, Zoe. On today's show, audio from the newest episode of Crip Talk Corner. This episode is hosted by Gift Zuma and Amy Lowe, and it is on the topic of movement and the recent American federal election. All that and more, right here on CQT 90.3 FM. You are listening to The Avalanche, where all abilities are welcome. If you'd like to get involved, you can call 514-448-4041, extension 6788, or email news at cqt.ca.
COVID-19 is at a critical level in your area or a neighboring region. Getting together with family or friends is prohibited, and traveling to other regions is not recommended. More targeted restrictions have been put into place to limit the spread and prevent a lockdown. Learn more at quebec.ca/coronavirus. Continue to wash your hands, keep a 2-meter distance, and wear a mask when physical distancing is impossible. We need to act now. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Welcome back to The Avalanche on CQUT 90.3 FM. On today's show, audio from the latest episode of Crip Talk Corner. This show was hosted by Amy Lowe and Gift Zuma, and this episode is about movement and the recent American federal election. That's up now.
Hello, everyone. We are back. It's been a long, long time, a hot minute. It's good to be back, and this time we brought some friends along, some very, very special guests, and so my name is Gift, as you all know, and this is my friend and co-host, Amy.
Great to be back. It's been too long. It's been far too long. And we're really thrilled to have our special guests here tonight. So folks, they're gonna introduce themselves, but first I wanna just thank everybody for taking the time to talk with us today and to dream and discuss and lay down some business about the theme of movement. So we have Barak Adesoleil, who's joining us from Chicago. We have Karin Mirchiami Jean-Francois, who's also joining us from Montreal, also known as Jojage, traditional Mohawk territory. And we have Leroy Moore, who is joining us from New York, right, Leroy?
No, Berkeley, California.
Berkeley, oh, okay, that's on the other side of the continent. Leroy Moore from Berkeley, California. Thanks, everybody. So, Kevin, do you want to introduce yourself first? I mean, we connected just recently over the fact that we had some crossover in some women's studies courses together. So, full nerd alert over here. But, know a little bit more about you.
Yeah, that was a really long time ago, but your name is, when you have names that are not common, it's easy to remember people. My name is Karine Mirjanet Jean-Francois. I work currently at the Disabled Women's Network of Canada. I'm a queer, black, fat femme, who's also a Stoonie. That's how I identify. Someone who has both mental and physical chronic issues. And I'm also someone who has dabbled a lot in writing. I keep writing, maybe not so much these days, and practicing art, whether it's playing the piano or singing. I don't quite identify as an artist yet, as a writer, yes, although I have performed at our local Pride in Montreal. So I was born and raised in Jojage, in traditional Ganyagana territory, and I still live here to this day, and I'm very excited to have a chat with all of you tonight.
Awesome. Fabulous. Thank you. Leroy, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, a little bit. Leroy Moore, born in the coldest place on earth. It's not the North Pole, it's Buffalo, New York. Got the hell out of there early, moved to Connecticut, grew up in Connecticut, New York. In the 70s and 80s, was an activist early on, and moved to California in 91. Here I started many organizations, disability advocates of minorities organizations for people of color back in the 90s, and I joined Poor Magazine, I'm still doing that. Sins Invalid, I helped start that with Patty Byrne, and that's still going on. And now with Crip Hop Nation, and also the National Black Disability Coalition. I wrote 5 books so far, and yeah, that's me.
Casually 5 books, just nobody. Love your books, man. Love your books. Thank you. And Barak, let those of us who don't know you know a little bit about yourself.
All right. Hello. And I'll begin by also giving acknowledgement around land and acknowledgement of also the communities in Canada that have taught me around understanding acknowledgements around land. And as Amy said, I reside currently in Chicago, which is on the ceded and unceded territories of the Council of Three Fires, among others. I'm going to acknowledge the Ojibwe and the Ottawa and the Potawatomi people among those. And really just in terms of being in Chicago on the unceded land, I'm looking to be as respectful of the land and the people in relationship to those who have come before us and the ongoing ways in which Indigenous people, and in some parts of states referred to as Native people, the ways in which to continue to honor, acknowledge, and take care of the land. So I want to offer that. The other way I want to offer acknowledgement is in acknowledging that at a point in time that I've used the term Crip acknowledgement, and I drew that term particularly from Leroy's use of the K in Crip. So I want to give a shout out, acknowledge Leroy for also bringing in the politics of the K into Crip, acknowledging that as we are in Crip Talk Corner, or hashtag Crip Talk Corner, that there are ways in which we can be Crip and Crip identified politically, culturally, and otherwise. I acknowledge that also the C of C-R-I-P is not just tied to a political identity, but also acknowledgement of being a part, being in a particular part of the world where there is Crip gang folk. And it is very real and tangible also in my legacy of my family. So I acknowledge all the Cripness, acknowledge that it is with all its complexities. I am a Black, queer, multiply disabled individual. I am large bodied, fat, friendly, and loving of myself. I'm wearing a lilac, perhaps, sweatshirt, clear glasses, a salt and pepper beard, and a shaved head. I am in my apartment, which includes in the background some shelving unit with, I want to say, a figurine from Django that is prominently displayed. I've been a part of the contemporary arts scene for 30 years. It'll be actually 30 years officially next year in 2021. I've been a part of the contemporary arts scene and have first entered into understanding and engaging with Canadians, and actually Montreal. So that was my first experience actually getting to know Canada, and I can talk more about that later. Yes.
Very memorable 10 days that I got to know you there, Barak. That was so cool. So Gift has some fabulous icebreakers since we know some of you know each other, but we kind of just wanted to have a little fun, beginning of our dinner party this evening. So,
Thank you. I thought just before we dive into our discussion, just to get to know each other a little bit more in a casual way. So I just have a few icebreakers here if you'd like, you could participate in. I am curious, who would be your dinner guest if you had to choose one?
Can it be historic or?
Historic, there's no, limit. It could even be a fictional character, anything. And why, of course.
I guess I can start. I'm going to say someone, and then maybe in 5 minutes I'll be like, but why did I not say someone else? But I'm just going to stick with one person for now. And that person, I think, is Audre Lorde. Audre Lorde is someone that, I would have loved to meet. Our lives are very different in lots of ways, but also very similar. Both our parents come from the Caribbean and immigrated. Well, hers to the U.S., my parents to Canada. She's a person who has put in words the experience of being othered in so many spaces, whether as a lesbian, right, whether as a person with a disability, whether as a Black person living in the U.S., but also in Mexico. That's also someone who's written about getting older. And the reason why I would love to meet her is not just because she wrote so amazing things that I relate to, and is someone that reminds me at least weekly, if not daily, that self-care is important and that, you know, we need to dismantle all the systems. But I would like to know, how does she do with happiness, right? How does she, because I feel I know a lot about her in the ways that she's told about us through Zemi, through her poetry, through her essays. But there's something I would like to just be like, so how do you cook? And like, what kind of spices do you use, you know? And what have you learned from being, you know, living in so many spaces? But also, how do you find happiness in all those spaces that we're other, but also are spaces that are also super important for us to be in? So Audrey is a person I would love to meet.
Awesome. Thank you.
I can go next. It's so hard to pick one. But I think Curtis Mayfield would be mine. I would love to talk to him about, you know, how he dealt with his disability is so powerful, you know. And his last album is just amazing, you know. Yeah, you know, and how he deal with his brother being disabled and, you know, coming into disability politics when he became disabled. You know, he took a total different route than Christopher Reeves, you know, and even Teddy Pendergrass. I mean, he was like on it. It had taken years and years to become, you know, physically active, or at least in his songs. Or I'd love to talk to him about that. I talked to him how he, you know, was independent from the music industry way before the internet. You know, it's like, how did he do that? He just was so out there. So yeah, I was about to interview him. I came close. I was talking to one of his sons, and also Crip Hop did a remix of a couple of his songs. So we wanted to get that passed, and we never got it past the family, but yeah, I'd love to meet him. Yeah.
I'm also going to say, I think this question is not just for the guests. So, Gift and Amy, this question is also for you all, right?
Sure. Yeah, of course.
We're all in this Crypt Talk corner together, right?
We are.
All right. So, I first had to begin by acknowledging that the first person to come to mind is my mother, who would be alive then for me to have dinner with, who I would cook for, and reflect back to her the ways in which she has profoundly given me such gifts of love and life and understandings of intersectionality before it was coined a term, and ways of being that I think were also very Crip, and ultimately very queer affirming. So I would say that would be, of course, my first and foremost thought, because, and she'd be with me right now. So, you know, but, and I also want to acknowledge Audre Lorde did come to my mind, so I so appreciate that. And I have to be honest, I don't have a one person, because I'm with multiple folks at the table. But particularly Octavia Butler, would be a person that I feel I would be extremely honored to be present with, and also to not ask for her to continue to have to produce anything, but just be. Like, I want to be like sipping tea with her, and again, cooking for her, and just being with her for a moment, just because what she put into the world is life, is transformative ways of thinking and radically imagining the ways in which Black, and I'm gonna say Black, queer, crip, femme folks are being in the world, and how we are imagining and how we're moving to change. And so it would be Octavia Butler. And I have to say that I would then have to also have Harriet Tubman show up.
Yes, yes.
Like, this is like, I feel like that's the, like, you know, to us, like Audre Lorde, Harriet and Octavia would be like the, you know, like the triumvirate that would have to be. And I would just be like, that'd be it for me. I'd be done. I'd be done after that. So yes.
That would be one hell of a dinner.
Yeah.
What would you cook?
So I think at the moment that come to mind is that I have to cook something from the earth of greens. I have to honor my mother's pot liquor greens, made my way with some, I think that. And I would say I think that's where I would start off with, like, greens, because greens have been such a story and narrative that I have charted and carrying forward, and also a notion of I would have brought up the other thing I would have brought up with something probably some sort of, like, I mean, I have to say, okay. Greens and probably some variation of fried chicken.
Yes.
Honoring all the negritude.
Amazing.
That's amazing.
So I spent the last 5 months with my mom. And so my answer is, like, family-based. I think I would invite my grandma on my mom's side, because I was close with her, like, when I was a kid, but I just find there's so many, like, connections in how my mom acts now and then how I act when I'm with her, that I would like to, like, have a chance to talk with her as an adult. And I remember when I was, maybe, like, in elementary school sometime, we had an assignment at school to interview a relative, and so it was like my first interview I think ever, and I interviewed her and I found out all this stuff about her life. In World War II she was British, and then she moved to Canada when World War II ended. And like, I don't know, I'm really interested in my history and learning my lineage and stuff, and yeah, it's important just, like, for knowing where I come from, but also knowing, like, how I relate to where I live and the different, like, ways that my personal history has been impacted by who my ancestors are and stuff. So that's one side of it. And then she also had, like, extreme sass, and I feel like that's also something that's translated. So so I think it would be a blast to have dinner with her and, like, joke around. And she definitely had, like, a feminist streak while keeping my grandpa, like, satisfied and happy and feeling like he was in charge. And I remember observing that and finding it, like, interesting how they interacted. And I find that I have a lot more or maybe it's just an illusion, but I feel like I have more control over my life than she might have, and So to find out more about what that was like for her would be really cool. And that's it.
Nice. Wow, this is a hard question. I know, who came up with that? I have so many, but I think like one I'd really, really love to have dinner with would be Martin Luther King Jr. The reason being is because like I'm spiritual, I'm Christian as well, and I'm also heavily involved in activism. And I'd be really curious to learn how he was able to balance the pressures of the church and also the pressures of the activism community as well, because they tend not to always see eye to eye on certain movements. So I'd be really, really curious like how he was able to navigate both of those worlds and also trying to keep a unity at the same time. So that, yeah, Martin Luther King Jr. for me. Yeah. All right. I think we're good, unless you guys have other questions that you're curious to ask Amy and I. No, we're good.
So today we're talking about movement, and we all move through space, and then we also move people and ideas and our voices and all sorts of different things. And so we wanted to kind of open up by asking you, like, what comes to mind when you think of the word movement, or like, what do you picture, or what do you feel when we say movement? For me, it's like a few different things, like just like wheeling around really fast gives me a lot of joy, and then also feeling like I don't necessarily like the word in relation to like social movements, because I found that it can be quite like constricting, or there can be like a lot of pressure associated with it. So I think of it more in terms of like freedom of mobility and that sort of thing. Yeah, love to hear what you think.
I think for me, when I hear movement, you know, being an artist slash activist, of course, I think about, you know, activists, how movements have changed the world, have changed, all things have changed our way of living. And I also see movement as Black disabled dancers and shakers just move their bodies and just totally, change how the body is shaped. You know, I go back to the elder Jim Crow. A lot of people think that Jim Crow is only, you know, legal, but he was an elderly Black man dancing outside, you know, and that stuck with me for so long, you know, is that, you know, he was dancing in his own community as a Black disabled elderly man, and yeah, and his movement was police. It's almost like today, you know, here in Oakland, a Black man was arrested because he was dancing in the streets in East Oakland. Like, wow, nothing has changed, you know. But, you know, the dancing body, especially the dancing Black body, is is police, you know. So yeah, so I see movements in an artistic way as a way to shift politics and the way to shift our society.
You like dancing, Leroy?
Yeah, you know. I like seeing it, you know, I like being it, I like the historical things about it. But yeah, last time I went out dancing was a long time ago.
All right. So, I mean, movement is essence and being. I think of that within the context as a contemporary artist who has largely been a part of the dance scene for a while, recognizing I'm actually not at all as invested in the concept of dance, more so in the articulation of our bodies and these movements that are have been articulated by those who are not within the dance movement, because the dance movement has largely been articulated in this part of the world specifically is deeply ableist, deeply elitist, and not at all inclusive. So I was a part of that movement for a while, and it reminded me spiritually, emotionally, physically, that that movement was never really built for my body. And that actually the ways in which I've already been moving, when I was moving in community, when I was moving as a child, when I was moving, you know, and social dances with my family, that was a movement that really was a thing that I drew upon. And then as I began to go deeper into looking at movement, recognizing it as, you know, the articulation of oneself through space and acknowledging and looking at and recognizing the details, the minutiae, the small movements that are actually quite powerful, and that allows every person the opportunity to move in their own being. Like that for me is movement. And so I look to those now. I look more to the act of me having now done things like ascent upstairs because I use a wheelchair, or things like that as movement that calls to mind how people need to be conscious and make apparent to things that are deeply problematic in our ways of navigating the world. And so I say that as one thing, you know, and the other framing and in relationship to my work has largely been the reason why I first started to call my network of artists that I would develop projects with called the underbelly, is in reference to the underbelly of the slave ship. So I'm going to acknowledge a deep or profound movement that moved people that I know, and I know ancestrally, a part of me, is the migration of Black bodies through the Middle Passage as one of the greatest and most profound movements that has shaped this part of the world in relationship to indigenous folk here. So in my work through the underbelly, I'm constantly seeking to acknowledge how that movement continues to inform how I move and am moved by the ways of being in the world.
I mean, really, really resonating with what the way I see movement for me is the way I see water, is the way I see waves, is the way I see waterfalls. It's the way that, like, collectively we're stronger, and it might seem like tiny, you know, tiny movements, tiny drop of water, but if we all put those drops of water together on one thing, we actually make sculptures. And that's the way I see it, as someone who's in part of different movements, who's always never quite sure if I should be joining this one or that one, because, like, technically I fit within so many, and also someone who believes in the collective power of doing things. So a few years ago, I was part of people who started a queer and trans Black Indigenous People of Color art festival in Montreal. And we did this because we were not seeing each other in, you know, really corporate prize. We're not seeing each other in the ways that people of color communities, which are really centered around immigration, our migration kind of discourses, were also established as mostly second generation, third or fourth even generation people of color still living here, but always being told that we're not from here. And for me, the way I see it is that we came together, we ate together, and then we decided together we're going to go towards this point and we're going to show that we existed. And maybe sometimes those movements create hurricanes and things that are not so pleasant, but sometimes they create beautiful things like waterfalls, like rainbows. And so for me, that's how I see movements. And I see that also our movements, and for me, it's very important that it's collective and not individual, because one person alone cannot necessarily be guided or leading something in one direction, but collectively we do that. But also collectively, we have a better impact because we all have those different skills, right? Of dancing, of creating or feeding people, of, you know, creating beautiful Excel task lists to make sure everything is going to be perfect. But also just, you know, people were there to welcome and listen and make sure the space is safe, you know, in so many different ways for, you know, the varieties of us who are queer and trans and Black, Indigenous, and persons of color. So that's how I see movement.
Wow. Thank you all for sharing. It's amazing. The way I see movement is the means to reaching the destination, whatever that destination is. And the means for that could be through creative expression. It could be through protest. It could be through community gathering, and that's how I see movement. Or it could be even musical expression, the way music plays a part in you, whether it's like a healing process or it's a way to express the emotions. So that's how I perceive movement.
I just want to point out, and I know there's movement in Leroy's background, but I also want to acknowledge that we have an individual who's in the background, that this is being recorded and will be broadcast. If Leroy, if your nephews are aware that they may be broadcast, you know, for, and we have their permission, because I would not want my body to necessarily be somewhere on someone's virtual space, and I don't know that.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, they know.
Okay, thank you. I just wanna, and I so appreciate the conversation on movement, and that stillness is also movement. Just say stillness is movement, recognizing that, you know, we sometimes think of movement in a particular thing or a particular way of like a kinetic thing that is a particular way of like looking and perceiving it, but stillness is movement. Stillness is choice of movement. Stillness and the ways in which activists have profoundly held their bodies in space is a movement. Disabled bodies saying actually, rest is a movement. Resisting a notion that we have to be in some sort of productive mode or having to move in a particular way. That for me, I think, is one of the most profound movements, is when we are able to allow ourselves to not think that we have to be caught up in the kinetics of life or in the kinetics of ableist way of being, that we actually take a moment to hold still and be. I think that for me is really a profound movement. So I just wanted to kind of put that out there, because I, you know, thinking movement is kind of happening a certain way, but actually going, this moment right of stillness is actually a profound way of thinking about movement as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, existing is resisting, right? especially as marginalized bodies, as marginalized people, as marginalized minds. Just the fact that we're alive and we're staying alive is like, it is maybe still in a lot of ways, but it's actually resisting, and resisting is movement. Staying alive, you know, being like, this is who I am. All of those things makes us and makes the world around us move in ways that I think sometimes we don't realize, but are very important. And yes, I love the NAP Ministry, which is a thing that is a very popular Instagram and Twitter account, which really recommends rest and napping as ways of healing our bodies and our minds.
Interesting what you said about like us resting or staying still, and then that requiring the world around us to move in a certain way. Like, I don't know, that really resonates for me. Even I guess I'm less aware of like how I'm perceived now, because I just like pay less attention to it, but it's definitely something that, you know, even just going to a spot with a few people who use mobility aids or like has a service dog or something, like it's a thing. It's like an event, you know, and like even the act of gathering is like it's a mobilization in a way, you know, and even just the process of like getting where we want to meet and to be in the same space as each other, especially now, is like undertaking, you know.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing. I'm curious as to how does movement play into your daily lives? Personally.
Yes.
I could start. It's like everything. Like, I dance in the morning, and then I do other stuff, usually on the computer. And then, like, my day is spaced out based on, like, when I'm going to go outside and wheel around or else walk around. And sometimes it's, like, frustrating how much of a consideration it is. In the summer, less so, but like we were talking about the winter before we started recording, and at that point it's a huge preoccupation. So those are like the really practical ways. And then like I want to make people like move the way they think, mostly. Like, that's like my big goal, myself included. So often I'm just like playing with words and moving them around too, to see what they do for me, and then testing them out on other people and like seeing how they move people to think or feel things too. So yeah, it's everything, pretty much. No big deal.
I really like what you said there, Amy, about like how movement is like you view it as how people think. Like, for example, with my case, I'm an artist. For some of you, I sing and I write music, I write songs, and I very much have a creative mindset, and I wake up listening to music. I go to bed listening to music. And when I'm experiencing intense emotions, whether it's sadness or happiness, I turn into music. I write as I'm feeling, as I'm going through that feeling. And something that's really interesting is when I have a weird dream, And I'm singing, I actually wake up and start singing the song out loud so I don't forget it in the morning, so that I can record it quickly on my phone. So yeah, even in my most relaxed state, my musical creative side is still moving. Yeah.
And I think we don't think about our creative minds as being like something that is part of our movement. I feel like I think of myself as movement, and it's really interesting. The confinement and pandemic has made me a lot more aware of the movement I get or do not get in my personal life. I'm not someone who's necessarily super active all the time, but I used to be able to walk to work and, you know, go around on my bike and things like that. And these days it's a little more complex because I work from home, which means I go between my bedroom and my living room, basically. So like going out for walks or just going on my balcony to smell the fresh air has been really important to me. Also thinking about different ways of like using my brain in some way. So like doing those silly games on my phone, like 2048 with numbers. I actually spent Friday night and Saturday night doing online Jeopardy with a bunch of nerds in French from across the, like mostly Montreal, Quebec, but also people in the US who are from Quebec. So just like different ways of using my brain and different ways of, you know, making sure that there's movement in the ways that I think as well. So, you know, following new people on Instagram and on Twitter, being made aware of different things, you know, thinking about myself and my role in the society that we live in, you know, taking the time to adorn myself, which is very important as part of my femme practice, intentional femininity practice, things like that. So like that's a little bit of what the movement is, and doing a lot of stretches, especially when you spend, I mean, I find for myself, because I spend so much time sitting in this chair, you know, and it's really important for me to stretch and to realize that there's muscles like I haven't used in so long. And doing some light ballet sometimes in front of my computer and that kind of thing. And just being intentional about, like, you know, what have I done myself? What have I done for my body? Like, have I cooked? I've had a little dance party in front of my computer with, like, good music. Have I just, you know, sat and done nothing? So, like, let's think of ways to, like, stretch my mind, my brain, my body in ways that feels good. And sometimes just to take a nap, because sometimes it's also what I need.
Yeah, I see my work is I'm always pushing, so it's movement. I'm always pushing to, I don't say the next level or to something that's new, you know. This last couple of months, Quip Hop has been pushing constantly, and now it's, you know, the things that are coming back, you know, being on a national newspaper and, you know, reaching out to Quip Hop members in Africa and building there, and, you know, and there's a new chapter in Wales, and so I consider that movement, I consider that me pushing, you know, that to come. So that's movement to me. You know, physically, I ride my bike, you know, like Karen was saying, my office is in my living room. I go to my bed and, you know, get up and go to my living room. So I had to remind myself that I have a bike, and, you know, I can take a ride, and, you know. So, yeah. So, I think most what I think about movement is getting people together and pushing what I want to see out there for the world. So I consider that movement. Yeah.
Leroy, I feel like I've seen your bike in person because I've seen it in photos and I love it so much.
Thank you. Yeah.
Track instead of wheels, my friend.
It's my car, really. I mean, yeah.
But I like what you said about like movement being about gathering people or bringing people together too. That resonates for sure.
Mm-hmm. And I would say like something that I find, and maybe I don't know about the U.S. context, but I'm sure it's not that different from Canada, is that I've noticed, I think we know collectively that the most of the Black people who have been killed by the police are actually people with disabilities, whether it's mental health, autism related. And yet we never hear disability organizations talking about how race is actually an important factor. And also are not necessarily like, you know, being part or co-conspirators of like movements like Black Lives Matter. And something I've been trying to do in some small ways through my work is to make sure that, you know, we advocate in that kind of situations, not just because it's happening in the US, because it's also happening here. There's been so many cases of Black and Indigenous persons with mental health or on the autism spectrum who have been killed by the different police corps across the country. We have a really good idea about Ontario. We have some good numbers. Like, we know what's happening a little bit in Manitoba and the Maritimes. Other places, it's not so clear. And at the same time, I find that's also part of movement, right? It's also to just, you know, collectively make sure that, you know, how do we become co-conspirators? How do we make sure that we elevate the voices and experiences of the people that often we forget in our own movements. And so for me, that's also something I'm trying to do, but it's also very hard because, you know, there's a good kind of disabled people, you know, middle class, white, you know, listens, respectable. And then there's the other people, the ones that people often don't care about. So I would say that's also something that around movement, that I think is important, like for me is important in my day-to-day, and not just in a work context, but also in a personal context of making sure what I can do to support people within my own communities who are more marginalized, but also how can I become a co-conspirator for other people.
Yes. I mean, I think in the context of thinking about the movement as part of the everyday, recognizing that it is in this particular moment heightened perhaps, but consistent, that the movement I think about, the movement that is about police and they're moving against certain bodies. And so I recognize that even as perhaps there is a siren in my background because of where I'm located, so I'm reminded of the presence consistently where I live. I am reminded of the presence of policing of our bodies, which for me calls into question how I move through my everyday life. It is always present. So I think about that. I'm reminded, and I was going to bring up, that there is sonic evidence or sonic ways of thinking that we are in movement. When I wake up, I'm in a movement, and or because my window is open, I'm reminded of the movement of people, I'm reminded of the movement of cars, I'm reminded of the movement of police, I'm reminded of the movement of bodies that have been injured moving through space. Sonically, that is what I'm drawn into in the everyday in terms of the notion of movement. that there are others moving, even as I might be resting, that the siren is happening and is a place of like perhaps triggering alarms or potential death or potential state's precarity. I am not in that same movement as those who are existing in that movement. So these things collide and they push against each other and they're juxtaposed. So I think of my movement as never being one of myself moving necessarily through space, but of the ways in which movement shows up is evident in my ways of being in my apartment. I am in a neighborhood that has been impacted by looting. It is literally, there was a particular incident that occurred which caused a movement that actually occurred, and this is happening at like, I think, 3 a.m. or something. I didn't know it was happening, but all of a sudden, there was certain loud voices, which is about people who actually had transitioned from one part of downtown Chicago to another, who passed down my block to loot the Walgreens pharmacy, which is right almost not even about 100 feet from where I am. So I am evidence of the movement of those folks, not knowing that that happened, only to find next day that that's what occurred. The movement that occurred from someone doing something in a part of Chicago, not far from where I live, police then shooting this individual, which then created a movement, the not necessarily the right kind of movement, because someone then said, oh, they shot a child. So then that caused a movement from the south side, where mostly black people are, to the north side, to the more of, to, you know, where the Macy's and the Bloomingdale's, to all those stores, they moved down to that area and then began looting. That's the movement that I recognize that is a part currently of my everyday sensation. I have to acknowledge those movements more so even in my own way of moving, you know, and to counter that, yes, I meditate, you know, I listen to my music, but I think in terms of, you know, GIF, we talked about the everyday, that right now is the everyday. That is what I'm existing in. I'm existing in those movements and the residue of those movements. And I will be remiss to not also say that, you know, in the pedestrian act of going to a bus, going down the street, and living in Minneapolis.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing.
On.
There is this thing going on.
What
do you realize?
Our consciousness is affected.
There is this thing going on.
What is called?
The news brought to you live.
Back to the Avalanche on CQT 90.3 FM. You are just listening to part of an episode of Crypt Talk Corner on the subject of movement. If you would like to listen to the remainder of the episode, you can go to the Accessibilize Montreal Facebook page or check out the link we posted on our Twitter, which is at AvalancheCKUT. And that concludes this episode of The Avalanche, airing every Wednesday from 5 to 6. To stay up to date with Avalanche news, you can check out our Twitter at AvalancheCKUT. Thank yous are due to all those who make educational and inspirational radio here at CQT possible. If you would like more information on anything you heard tonight, or would like to participate or support news produced by and for the Montreal community, please contact The Avalanche at avalanchecqt.ca or CQT's Community News Department at 514-448-4041, extension 6788, or email news at cqt.ca. Stay tuned for Hearsay. That's up next. We'll be right back.